What's up, guys? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. This is part two of how to build a consultancy with Simon Walters. Let's get into the intro and then me waffling on for a little bit more.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety, crushing the stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Fluent. Okay, guys, this is part two. Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety does exactly what it says on the tin. We're to challenge those over-the-top practices and those perceptions of health and safety. And we do that through long-form interviews like this one on a podcast and tips, tricks, how-tos, etc., vlogs, keynotes, the whole shebang on YouTube as well. So if you're new here, hit that subscribe button and the like and the bell and all those buttons that you've got to press because it really helps me with the algorithm and all that malarkey. So this is part two of a two-part episode with Simon Walters, who's going to tell us essentially how to build a consultancy, or really how to build a business, because it's kind of all the same, really. If you haven't listened to part one, make sure you go and check that out. Simon has just got some extensive experience in building a business, and with my kind of opinionated nature when it comes to consultants, I really do think we can bring some value in this conversation. So I hope you enjoy it. I'll stop waffling on. Let's get into today's second episode of the two-part series conversation with Simon. Let's get into the podcast. Lovely jubbly. Simon, welcome back, part two.
Nice to be here again, James.
Yeah. You sure?
what does the S on your cup stand for? Does that stand for Simon?
It stands for safety. No, it doesn't really. Oh, okay. My wife's name is Sherry. It's...
Oh, okay. I thought it was like a special cup for me.
Oh, of course it is. Yeah, I do that for all of my guests.
All right. Excellent.
Yeah, I've got thousands of different lettered mugs now, basically.
Or you can only invite people on your podcast with the first name beginning with S.
Yeah. Look back at who we've had on. It all starts with S. Oh, well, they've got S somewhere in their name.
Yeah. Oh. No, cool. But no, thanks for having me back on. Really enjoyed it the other day. I think we could have talked for ages. Yeah. The other day, and we didn't really touch much on safety. It was kind of more around the business element and our background into safety and rhino safety, which was nice.
I think that's good, mate. I think, you know, what you can really, not to say that you're not a good safety professional, I'm sure you are, but like, you know, where I think your real value comes in is what you're doing with Raw. It's like, and you said it yourself, you know, that's your passion is building businesses. So, you know, 100%.
I mean, I say that to my staff now. There are better health and safety professionals than me. I'm a chartered member of IOSH, but my passion is in business and building businesses up. And I don't, other than doing my CPD, I don't really want to do much more from a health and safety training point of view. My goal now is to build my consultants. I want them to achieve chartered status. And that is my goal, while I look more at the strategic element of rhino safety and looking at how we're going to drive the business forward, certainly in these times at the moment with COVID-19 and that all going on and everyone on lockdown. It's like, well, how do we survive? And then how do we grow and how do we come out at the back end of that? So that's certainly where personally I want to be. And it's quite interesting because you do get consultants that set up on their own and they only ever want to be a one-man band, which is obviously fine, but we took that different angle to it and we wanted to grow a business, not to say that they don't have a proper business, but a business where we have, you know, hundreds of clients.
An empire.
A lot of staff. Yeah, eventually. No, I think I alluded to last time, we set up Rhino to be happy.
Yeah.
We did lose that focus about 12 months ago, where we were much more focused on turnover goals. And we brought it right back round to being happy again. And we don't want to lose that focus. So if we do grow bigger, it will be on the understanding that happiness is always there, is in the background. I mean, we do things like we take our staff out for lunch, we go out for breakfasts, you know, we go to there's a pizza place near us that do pizza and waffles that's just amazing. So we'll go out there, they get a day's holiday for when it's the birthday. We'll have, you know, bringing cakes now and again. We'll go out and we'll do charitable events, like we did a fire walk, I think that was last year or the year before. Cool. And things like that. And I think it's, you know, you're a long time working, and I think it's really important to treat your staff as you would like to be treated.
And I think as well, like, there's a couple of things. We'll come back to that staff thing, because I think we touched on that in the last episode, and I think there's a very good and valid conversation to have there. But I like what you kind of said, and it resonates with me about, you know, being upfront about saying, you know, you lost your focus a little bit, you were counting the numbers and you know, lost the why did we actually do this. And I think that resonates to so many people. Like, even if you're in my game, for example, and you start a podcast tomorrow, you start a YouTube channel tomorrow, you know, you're trying to build your social media kind of presence, for example, counting those subscribers, and you know, this is fresh for me, for as a prime and kind of fresh example. I took a huge break in February, took a month off, if I'm brutally honest, you know, kind of burnt out. Took a month off, just didn't produce any content whatsoever. We had some content we could have put out, but I just decided no, I just disappeared off the face of the earth for 1 month potentially. And we took a massive hit in listeners, according to our kind of platform we used to host. We lost probably, according to that platform, about 200, according to, and I was like, shit, like that's 200 clients potentially, especially where now we're starting to grow, and we've just kind of got our first affiliate partnership now. So, you know, we're actually starting to get opportunities to bring money in, and we've just lost 200 clients. And I was, and it got this just this morning, you know, I'm on a walk and listening to some other podcasts, and it's just like, I don't know what happened, but something just made me think, for God's sake, you know, that's really got me down now. And then I come back, and just this morning before we had our first call, I had a call this morning at 10 o'clock, did a bit of research, and it turns out that the platform we're using, their analytics is not great for measuring the other platforms. So like Spotify and iTunes are not great at that. So what you can do apparently is go into Spotify and get their raw ones and then go on iTunes. So we found out it's actually not as bad as what we thought. Actually, it's a little bit better than what we thought. But forget that, because today I had three back-to-back interviews. I'm bouncing off the walls, mate. Have to remind myself why I do this, and I do this because I love talking. I love the sound of my own voice. I love talking.
You'll get on well with my wife.
I love talking to people that you know, love what they do, whether it's building a business like yourself, whether it's being a safety professional, whether it's being you know, we just, like I said earlier, interviewed Dominique from the Royal Opera House, and this morning Tim Marsh. You know, they love what they do. They've got fascinating work. And I'm buzzing. You have to kind of bring yourself back to ask yourself,
why? And I think it's important that you don't dwell too much on the past, and you always got to focus on where the future, what lies for you in the future. I remember when we set up, we signed a massive client. You know, it was really big client, and you know, we're really happy with it, and for one reason or another we lost them. They didn't renew after 12 months, and it was devastating, absolutely devastating. You know, they were, the income from that was a massive help to keeping the business going, and we took a massive hit. And I remember getting in the car, and I rang Kate, and I said, you know, look, you know, they've not re-signed. And I think that's why we work well, because I was feeling really down, and then she was like, well, you know, this is going to give us more time now to focus on the future. You know, the time that we were spending dealing with that client, you can now go out and do more prospecting. And she kind of like brought that back round. And then we've grown on from there. And interestingly, that client came back to us about 2 years ago, which was nice. So I think it all comes back round.
Full circle, yeah.
But you can't dwell on mistakes. You know, you said about, you know, you didn't do anything in February. Now you could look back and beat yourself up about that, but there isn't anything you can do about that. You can't change it. So there's no point in dwelling on it, and you do need to look forwards. Conversely, you do also need to remember where you've been. So remember, I've been saying about us focusing too much on the numbers of about 12 months ago. And it got to a point where we missed one of our monthly sales targets. And I was devastated, completely beating myself up. You know, this is ridiculous. We've missed this target. We're not going to hit our 12-month goal. And then Kate went, well, what did we do this time last year? And we did like 10 grand less than what we'd just done. So when we actually look back, we have improved. And I was beating myself up for increasing our turnover by 10 grand, even though we missed the target.
Yeah.
So that's why it kind of made us think, well, we need to bring it back round to why we set up the business in the first place, and that was to be happy. It wasn't to hit a target. I mean, what is a target anyway? It's just a number. It's just a figure.
The ironic.
Do you know what I mean? Because I'm running the business. Yeah, we decided on those targets ourselves. It's not like we've got shareholders or anything else that are going to beat us up for not hitting those targets. It was us putting the pressure on ourselves. So, yeah, I think it is important to not dwell on the past, but to also congratulate yourselves and make sure you don't lose sight of why you set up. So instead of beating ourselves up for missing that sales target, we actually brought it back round and went, well, we've actually increased our sales by 10 grand in 12 months, which is a really good achievement.
I think that is powerful. I do think, I remember listening to, when I started podcasting, listening to Pat Flynn, who's just a huge podcaster in, I think he's moved into YouTube now as well, actually. He's massively successful in the podcast game and kind of passive income game, if you want to call it that, in America. And he's quite interestingly got, I'm sure it was Pat, I could be wrong, it could be someone else, but basically got like a notice board in his office, which is basically screenshot and printed like really positive feedback that someone's given him. And he just has that on a kind of board in his office, just as turnaround, you know, because let's be honest, when you're starting this kind of podcast and YouTube, social media game, you get haters, you get people that write nasty shit, and that just, you can't avoid it. It's unavoidable. I've only had one, if I'm honest, that one person that just said, why don't you do this in a blog? I'd much rather read it in a blog. Well, piss off to somebody that reads a blog then, mate, because I can't spell for shit, so I'm not going to do it. So he kind of uses that board to kind of remind himself, and I do think that's interesting, you know. And I still am so just shocked and grateful that we've got like 217 subscribers on YouTube. So that's 217 people that have pressed a button to decide to listen and watch my content and get notified of my content on a regular basis. You have to kind of remember those things, don't you, to ground yourself, to survive those kind of, whether it's a little nudge, you know, a little step back, whether it's a big hit on a business like yourself in coronavirus now, you know, whether it's losing a client, doesn't matter. All of it is the same. It's grounding yourself in those positives. It's a great message, I think, mate.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've had haters. I remember someone rang up and asked for a quote, just a rough quote for health and safety. And I told him, we've got a minimum fee. So I told him our minimum fee. And he just put the phone down on me, you know, without saying anything. And I was just like, wow. It's just, you know, ridiculous. But you got to bear in mind that you're not going to please everyone. And that's why we don't really worry when there's, you know, competitors and things like that, because, you know, we've targeted the kind of high quality health and safety service. So we're not the cheapest, but there are people that have targeted that. They want to be the cheapest. They're going to sell loads. And that's not where we position ourselves in the market. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, then that person that put the phone down on me can go to one of my competitors that do charge cheaper. And it's the same with raw business coaching. I remember we posted something out on Facebook, just advertising our services, and it had our costs in it as well, because we always believe that, you know, you should be transparent and upfront with your costings where you can. And I remember a couple of people posting on there saying, you know, too expensive. Why don't people just do networking instead? And Kate was all about to go back in the comments and start having a do with him. And again, this is where we work well. And I kind of calmed her down and said, look, well, what getting into an argument with them now on social media, what is that going to accomplish? Mm. It's not going to accomplish anything. However, the takeaway from this is they clearly don't understand what a mastermind is. Mm. They seem to think that the mastermind is a kind of like networking and you get business out of it, whereas the mastermind is more of like you're helping each other grow, you're helping with issues, problems. Yeah. So I actually made it clear that we weren't explaining what a mastermind was. So we actually took, you know, those comments from some haters and actually turned it around to
positive
change. Yeah, we changed our marketing style. So the next few posts we had on social media was describing what is a mastermind, what happens at our mastermind groups. We did some videos as well, just explaining a little bit more. So rather than get into an argument, which obviously takes your focus and does take energy as well, we turned it round and described a bit more. And since that, we've not had anything else as well, but you are gonna get it.
You will get it, and you're right, it takes energy. You know, let's think, like, just look at boxing. There's a reason they trash talk each other, because it's a psychological game. It takes energy, you know.
Yeah. And
people just enjoy seeing successful people bite on comments like that. And there is some people, there's a guy local to me who does kind of like, so his business is kind of like social media and videos and stuff like that, and he's very proactive on those negative comments, and he works very hard on actually replying, but replying very like overtly positively. And yeah, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it does work. But he will turn it around on them as a real positive. And it's quite clever how he does it. And I said to him, like, you know, how did that come? And he did say, over time, like, this is slow, because your first, And you probably know, like, when somebody makes those comments about your business, like you said in episode one, I think it was, like, you know, this is your baby, isn't it? Like, everyone who runs a business or even has like a weird podcast like me, it this is your baby. And when somebody says something bad about it, you do become defensive of it. But that gentleman who said, why don't you just write this in a blog? The manner in which he said it was wrong, but what he's saying does have a point. Is I'm missing out on a potential stream of content by not blogging, and that is there on our kind of radar. And if it didn't cost so much to get someone to transcribe what we do, then we would probably do it. But I'm not bloody transcribing what I say.
But I think there's a lot of virtual assistants now that you can use. I mean, have you read Tim Ferriss's book? 4-hour work week.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't read it.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. And it says you can hire a virtual assistant in a different country, and you don't pay them that much. And if it is simple, basic things like transcribing, obviously there may be a language barrier using someone in a different country. But if it is transcribing, it can be quite cost effective to do that. So, but you're right, you need to take the actions away from the any comments that you get on wherever, social media or just feedback from clients and things. You know, we always get asked for training, and we never provided training, and because we got asked for it so much, we then invested in an online training portal, and we now make, you know, we now make a bit of profit out of that every year. So yeah. You do need to look at feedback, but I wouldn't necessarily say you should act on everything you get.
Yeah, it's interesting with the different kind of tactics against it. And I think, you know, everyone can listen and kind of build their own tactic. There's something else you did say that I quite liked, and there's probably not much of a conversation around this, but I would just like to say, I like the sound of you putting your prices up on because it drives me insane when I'm looking for something. They don't tell me how much it is. Like, please ring us to tell how much it is. Not, I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
I want to go on the website and I want to find 3 different contractors that tell me. And I understand that different jobs, you know, need quoting, and I understand that. But a general day rate or a general kind of package or whatever would just help me as a client, as a customer. For God's sake, write your bloody prices on your website.
Well, I was interested in like an online PT, and I've been following his work. I like what he does. He had a very good, he looked like a very good program in place. He did some free challenges and things. So I did them, really liked his style, messaged him and said, you know, give us a rough idea of your costs, and he said, oh, we need to get on the phone, you need to book a Zoom call with me to see if we're right, to see if we can work together. And I was like, well, I don't want to waste your time, you know, I've got a figure in my head, you must have a minimum, give us a rough cost. Oh no, you can't, you know, I don't know if you're right for me and I'm right for you. And I was like, look, I'm really busy, I'm not going to book an hour Zoom call, you know, for you to go through your sales pitch to then come up with tell me a price at the end. They've just wasted an hour of my time and an hour of your time. And he refused to send me a price over. So I've just not taken it any further because it's just
business.
And then I've just been like,
he could have said that's £5 an hour, for example, and you'd have been like, well, that's well within my budget. There we go, got business. And then we have a call to say whether we fit or not. And another thing that drives me insane is somebody doing a sales pitch and then saying, and how much do you think you pay for that, James? I don't know. Because in my mind, a tenner. Like, I want to pay a tenner for everything. No more, no less. I feel stupid by, like, underquote, because I never know what number to pick. And two, everything they come back is always much more than what I say, so I look like a tight ass. Yeah. Just tell me how much it's going to cost me. That's all I want.
Yeah. I mean, very early on, and I don't know why we did this, but we set a minimum fee. So we said, look, if anyone wants to work with us, it's £100 a month minimum, you know, and then the price goes up from there. And we've been very, you know, very transparent, you know, look, you know, if it's under that, we can't do anything for you. However, you know, we can point you in the, you know, in the direction of some of our competitors, which I don't know what they charge, but we can, you know, we can point you in the direction of some competitors. And, you know, we're very happy to give a rough cost in. You know, if someone rings us up and just lets us know what they do and what industry they're in, we can give them a rough idea over the phone. Interestingly, and I think I said it in the first podcast, we're looking at developing ourselves, Kate and I, developing ourselves as business people. And we've done a lot of training around all different, you know, business elements. And one of the courses we went on last year was sales training. And part of that was being very transparent and very clear with your pricing strategy. And making sure that, you know, you do tell people, you know, what your costing is. And interestingly, in the sales training, obviously it's Kate and I that run the business, and we've got 7 staff. So while we were there at the training, I think it was on a Monday, what they did is the guy taking the training rang our office and asked them for a price for health and safety as like a test to see what they would say, knowing that I obviously do, me and Kate do the majority of the sales. So obviously the point of this was to see, well, when you're not there, what do your staff say to someone who's after a price? So we rang them up, and they took the call, but they wouldn't give a price out because obviously we'd not trained them, we'd not told them what to do. And yeah, they were very courteous and things like that, but they couldn't give a price. And you know, the guy running the sales training was like, look, I need a price now. I'm ready to go. I'm literally, I want to sign up. I just need a price. And he made a point that they were like, it was very interesting when we got back. They were like, we just had this funny call. But yeah, it was very interesting that after that, we made sure they had a script, a rough idea of costings. You know, it is rough. They have to ascertain is it a high, medium, or low risk business, and then give them a rough cost that will be confirmed later by Kate or ourselves. And then we went from there with it. So that was a very interesting. Very interesting exercise to actually go through. And I think that's in a lot of people get to a point in their safety career, whether they become, you know, chartered member of IOSH or whatever, and they go, right, I want to look at setting up my own consultancy. You need to have those sales skills, or you need someone that you know that's going to work for you to have them. You may be the best health and safety consultant out there, but if you don't know actually how the sales process works, how to actually ask for an order, then you're not going to get any business. You're not going to do well. And I think that's why we come at it differently. I'm very business orientated. So, for example, when I'm recommending solutions and controls to hazards and risks for my clients, it's not an arse covering exercise. It's a business focused exercise. You know, we've been into clients and they've been told, oh, we need to install a full emergency lighting system in our building. And I go in and ask them, well, do you work at night? No. And then, you know, we go through that whole process and it's like, well, what can we do that actually controls the hazard but isn't going to cost you, you know, 5-10 grand? So I think we put a good business head on it.
How do you go about that kind of conversation in the beginning of working out your pricing structure? And I know you said you can't remember why you set a base level, but like that kind of, I think it'd be helpful for anyone, me included, to, there's got to be some kind of like competitor research. How much are other people charging? You know, what are you even delivering? You know, some people would be happy to only work on retainers, and some people were happy to just deliver a one-off fire risk assessment or one-off manual handling training or whatever. Is juggling that and actually deciding what I want to deliver as a business is probably one of the first challenges people have, would you think?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that goes back to, you know, being a very good health and safety consultant doesn't necessarily mean that your consultancy is going to be successful, because, you know, I know people out there that charge £150 day rate. We charge £500 day rate on, you know, on an ad hoc fee. James, can you just bear with me 1 second?
Yeah.
I just need to go and shout at someone downstairs because there's loads of banging. Right, I'm back. All right, hopefully you can cut that out.
Yeah.
If not, leave it in. It might be a bit funny.
So to be honest, normally I do ask sometimes, like, do you mind if I leave that in? Because I quite like, especially now when we're all working from home.
Shouting at my wife.
I think it just sounds natural. Like sometimes I have people knock over a cup just give the microphone a knock. It's just life, but don't worry.
Yeah.
I will cut you going, okay.
Leave it in if you want. Going back to the pricing, we aligned ourselves, we decided where we wanted to be within the market. So we wanted to be kind of like mid-range, so not the cheapest. You know, you get a lot of one-man bands out there. We wanted to be like kind of mid-range, not the cheapest, not the most expensive. So that was our positioning initially. What we also did, because we'd always, in the industries or the businesses that we were in before, and a lot of our large competitors, so Peninsula Citation, MHL, what they do is they put clients on retainers. Yeah. And we really liked that model, rather than, you know, you pay us 50 quid and I'll write a risk assessment for you. Mm-hmm. So our model was, we look at signing people into 1 year, 2 year or 3 year deals on a retainer, and we basically are their health and safety department. And that you know, includes a number of site visits, writing the health and safety policy, the risk assessments.
Just quickly, for those that might not know, a retainer is, if I'm right, like a lump sum up front that like buys that year, is that right?
Yeah, so yeah, we agree on a lump sum, and they can pay that over on a monthly fee as well. Okay. If they want to. So say, for example, it was £2,000, they could just divide that by 12.
Yeah.
And pay us per month. So that's the model that we decided on. And that includes like things like fire risk assessments. We'll throw in some online training as well. And it's based on what the client wants. There is a rough template there. But the client may say, well, we don't want a fire risk assessment, or we want to see you every month, or, you know, once a year is fine. So then that determines the cost. Right. So I think what a good idea is to work out what your day rate is. Yeah. And then base your if you want to do a retainer model, is base your retainer around that day rate. So like I say, I know people that charge £150 for a day, which is just, you know, incredibly cheap. Mm. And I do think you need to value your time. You know, you can be the best health and safety consultant, you can write the most fabulous risk assessments, but if you're only charging £50 for it and they're taking you 2 days to write, you're going to go out of business. You're not going to get enough. Yeah. You haven't enough time in the day to write enough risk assessments to generate enough money.
And I do, to a point, I do think that, and I'm not going to tar everyone with the same brush, but in my experience, if you pay cheap, you get cheap, in my experience. However, I'm not tarring everyone with the same brush. You know, it could be anything. You know, I've had people approach me about doing a fire assessment and done them for a little bit. You know, it's dirt cheap, you know, absolutely dirt cheap, just to cover essentially my insurance and bits and bobs like that, and probably like 20 quid on the top to go out for dinner, and that's it. So, and I would like to say I delivered quite a good risk assessment, so I don't think that that saying does work across the board. However, in my experience, thinking of a couple of contractors that I've come across, you know, you get the classic as a safety professional, procurement coming in and saying, God, look, it's only like 200 quid for a fire risk assessment. Yeah, yeah. Because I wouldn't wipe my ass with it. You know, it's going to be that bad. you know, the average £250 to £600, I think, for a fire assessment nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. I went down to Essex to see a potential client down there, and to pitch for the work. And we were having a chat, and he was using someone, and he was paying them on an hourly rate. So I think it was a one-man band, and he was paying him by the hour. And we were just having a general chat, and he said, "Oh yeah, he was here the other day, and he wrote me a risk assessment on making a cup of coffee." And I said, "Look." I said, look, I don't care if you don't use me, but stop using this guy, because, you know, you've got a risk assessment here for a cup of coffee, but you've got half your machines out there that haven't got risk assessments on. Mm. You know, you're paying him by the hour, and he's just sat in here writing, you know, coming up with things to write risk assessments on, because you're paying him by the hour. Mm. You know, so I think the monthly retainer model that we use, I think, you know, works really well for us, but really well for our clients, because they know that their health and safety is going to cost them X amount a month or X amount a year.
and they can.
And they know that any health and safety issues, they can just pick up the phone to us and say, "Look, we've got this problem. You know, I need this PQQ filling in, this pre-qualification questionnaire, or I need my construction line accreditation doing." And they know that we'll just deal with them. There's no additional costs. Only any additional costs are just agreed beforehand, and that's things like if they want us to, you know, do an extra visit to site or anything like that. But 9 times out of 10, it's all covered in what they pay us anyway. So it works for them, and it works for us because we know what income we're going to get each month as well.
Yeah.
So if there is a global pandemic, you know, then stuff doesn't shut down. I mean, we've got competitors that are predominantly health and safety training companies. Now, they've just had everything shut now. I mean, a lot of them now are shifting to doing stuff online and via webinar, but, you know, imagine going a month with no income coming in. Mm. So that's why the retainer model is good. And on the flip side as well, it adds value to your business. So we can say, you know, we've got X amount of clients, you know, we've got 134 clients currently on retainers at the moment. You know, we've got some clients that are on a 3-year retainer. So it's interesting because the previous jobs I was in, we were told, people don't really sign up for that long. You can't charge them that much money, you know, for health and safety. And, you know, we've just shown that that's not true.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about being a bit like, I want to kind of focus on the, sorry, my dog's just come in, completely distracted me. I want to kind of bring it back to that kind of that, like, building of a business, and that because I just think that is just something we've never covered before, essentially, and I do think it's something that's massively valuable. But do you think, like, being a safety consultant before, like, I genuinely believe that the foundations of safety, like good safety, like forget the bloody paperwork, forget the risk assessments, forget your RAMs and all that crap, like just forget all the bureaucracy. The foundations of safety being leadership, risk management, you know, creating a good culture where people actually want to be, it's just good business. So did you find that, you know, being a safety professional, there were some skills that were transferable in building a
yeah, totally. Yeah, totally, because I think you're always doing, you know, a risk assessment, whether it's like, you know, we spoke before about sacking a client. Well, how much money is that client bringing in every month?
Mm.
You know, so on one hand, you're going, well, how much money are they bringing in? So what happens if we sack the client? You've lost this revenue. But if we don't sack the client, how much time are they using? How much time are they wasting when we go to site and they're not there? We can't do an inspection. Or the other thing is they weren't listening to what we were asking them to do. So they've got machinery that maybe they weren't guarding or they weren't training the staff on. Well, if they're a client of ours and there's an accident, who are they going to call when the HSE turn up?
Mm.
Who's going to have to go through a full, you know, accident investigation and get, you know, interviewed by the HSE when something goes wrong? And then we've got to explain that, well, we've been asking to do this stuff and they haven't done it. So how do we prove that? And so I think you're always in business unconsciously, you know, trying to assess the best way to do things. You know, it's difficult times at the moment with COVID-19. We had a number of clients ring up and say, you know, look, we've got no money coming in now. Can we have a payment holiday?
Yeah.
So me and Kate have to decide, well, what do we do? Do we give them a payment holiday, but we lose that income for 3 months? But if we lose that income for 3 months, they could survive. So they could come back as a client in 3 months' time.
Yeah.
Like long-term business. Take a hit.
Kind of thing, yeah.
So can we take that hit to help them out in the long run? So I think, you know, it is always looking at that, well, what impact is it going to have on us and how do we control that impact on the business?
Mm.
And what should we do? You know, we did give payment holidays to all the clients that asked for it. You know, we've got clients in the event industries. All weddings have been cancelled, you know, all summer, big festivals gone. We've got clients in the aviation industry that were working for Virgin Atlantic. Just Virgin Atlantic's been around, you know, shut the door on him.
Mm.
So we said, you know, yeah, you can have a payment holiday, but we had to weigh up, you know, what's the impact on our business for that. So I think safety does give you a good grounding in business from that point of view.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest mistake I do see is people not valuing the time. And I think this goes back to like, well, what do I charge? Yeah. You know, part of the raw business coaching, we do a lot of work with people and like, well, how do I charge this? How do I, you know, what price do I put on it? Yeah. And yes, so you can go to and find out what your competitors are charging. But I think that can be a very dangerous game to play. I mean, we had one of our coaching clients came to me and said, well, how should I price this? She wanted to move. She's a food safety expert. And she wanted to move on to a monthly model like we do. So we're working on her pricing. And I can't remember the exact figures, but I think her pricing came out at something like £350 a month after we'd done a load of work based around what her day rate is and what she was going to offer. Yeah. And the pricing was about £350 a month. So she went away and was typing all that up as a proposal. And then she rang me in a bit of a panic and said, look, oh, I don't know if I can charge this much because a big competitor of mine is charging £200 a month. And I said, all right, well, you know, calm down. Let's have a look at this. You know, what are they actually charging for? And when she actually looked at it, they weren't charging for, you know, site visits. So there's all these additions that they had to charge. I said, look, you're a food safety expert. You know, used to be an inspector. You can provide these businesses with one-to-one bespoke advice and support. Your big national competitor that you're looking at your pricing against isn't the same as you. They're not offering the same service. So don't get stressed out too much. You can use a competitor's pricing to get kind of gauge the market and gauge where you then want to position your market, where you want to position your pricing, you know, higher, lower, or the same as them. But don't get too worried if your pricing isn't the same. You know, our pricing is higher than some of our national competitors, but we provide a very bespoke, a very more personal one-to-one service. You know, there's only seven of us in the team. So any of our clients, when they ring up, everyone knows what the clients do. Everyone knows who runs the business. So we can provide that quick, fast response that is bespoke to what our clients' needs are. And I think it's very important that safety professionals make sure that they do value their own time, because, you know, if they've been working in the industry for a long time, they've got a lot of experience that they can provide that not many other people can do.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a shameless sponsorship clip. In all seriousness, guys, we partnered up with DRM Group. You know, David McLean, he's been on the podcast time and time again. We absolutely support his message, and he's got a brand new online course to help you. I'm going to let him tell you all about it now.
The brain can be trained to think and behave differently, to think in more positive and optimistic ways. And there are steps that you can take to train your brain to feel good for good. And we call this lasting positive change. Through our 16-day program, which includes daily videos and action sheets, taking you no longer than 15 minutes to complete a day, you will learn how to move away from thoughts of anger, hopelessness, and frustration to a place of mental well-being and positivity.
Okay, guys, so if you're interested, you can click the link below and get a discount, special rebranded safety discount. Full disclosure, we get a little bit kickback from that. So at the same time as improving your mental health, you can support your favorite health and safety podcast and YouTube channel. I'll let you get back into the content.
What do you It'd be interesting to get your opinion. It's slightly off track, but not. Say if you had like a so like a member of a safety professional essentially that's kind of had years of experience in kind of the leadership level and kind of, you know, positioned himself now to be able to start his own consultancy, but essentially is targeting the more corporate position of a business. So it's more like his product essentially is not your kind of day-to-day consultancy. It's the, you know, I want to be approached by a brand to come in and say, hey, look, we do the basics okay, but now we need someone to come in and help us around that corporate culture leadership package. So, you know, you're talking like your big kind of money, you know, this is a big like high level kind of role.
Yeah.
But if you're in that position and that's a product you want to deliver, right?
Yeah.
But in the beginning, you're not getting those products, those businesses, those leads turn into sales. But what you are getting is approached by, you know, Bob's Mechanics down the road saying, can you do a fire risk assessment?
Yeah.
I think this is a common conflict, is like, well, that's not what I want to do. I don't want to deliver fire assessment. I don't want to deliver manual handling training. But yeah, at the moment, I'm not getting those kind of big corporate packages that I want to get. Is it okay? Is it, you know, obviously people make their own decisions, but in your opinion, well, what do you do in that position when you need the money as well? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's a hard conversation. Need the money, but you fall into the trap, and this is why we set our minimum fee. You fall into the trap of just, you know, doing something for the money. You know, with a fire risk assessment, you're writing a legal document. You know, if that goes wrong, if there is a fire and someone dies, you know, they're going to grab that fire risk assessment and see what's, you know, what's written in there. And it, you know, fire risk assessors have been sent to prison because of what they've done in their assessment. So
I mean, probably from a point like, so the kind of gentleman I'm thinking of would from a competence point of view be quite easily be able to deliver that stuff, but they don't they don't want that to be their business, that kind of basic consultancy. They want to be a kind of essentially like a culture expert, but now they're conflicted because it's like the culture expert takes a while to get that kind of big packages come through. But at the moment, they could do with a couple of, you know,
well,
good fire assessments.
I think if they need the money, then yes, do them, but don't take your focus off where you want to be.
Yeah.
So what you don't want is to be spending all your time doing fire risk assessments, but actually wanting to be working, you know, for some big corporates. You need to be, if you're not moving in the right circles, if you're not, you know, if you said to me, right, how do I get in front of big corporates? Join the Institute of Directors, go to their networking events, join your local Chamber of Commerce, see which members are there that you want to work with.
Yeah.
You know, go on to LinkedIn and start connecting with all those people. Because if you're not doing that, because you're doing fire risk assessments at garages, you're never, ever going to get there. Yeah. And I think that's where you've got to be very careful. Like I said before, you've got to be very careful with your time. Where are you spending your time and where are you spending your focus? Because if it isn't looking for these big corporates, you're never going to get there.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that 100% of your time should be focused on these big corporates, because if you need a little bit of cash coming in, then yeah, do these, you know, the smaller jobs here.
Yeah, you do like 60, 40, 50, 50, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, but the other thing is to have a very good spread of clients. So, for example, you know, we've got 134 clients. They range in size, they range in industry. You know, we don't work with offshore, we don't work in the nuclear industry, and we don't work in the mining industry, but pretty much anything else, you know, we've got covered. So hotels, logistics companies, engineering companies, manufacturing companies, anything like that. So, which is good, because now we've seen aviation industry is ground to halt, events industry is ground to halt. So we've lost clients that work in both those other industries. But pharmaceutical industries, IT industry, clients in those absolutely crazy busy at the moment. So I think you need a good range of clients. If you're working for one type of client, or if you've only got one client, then you've got a massive issue if anything happens to them. You know, if they look at cutting costs, if they go bust, you've got no business. So yes, you may have a target ideal client. I think it's very good to be very clear on who your ideal client is. So our ideal client for Rhino is engineering manufacturing companies in the Northwest that have got about 10 staff. So that's our perfect client, because they obviously medium high risk businesses, so they know they need health and safety. However, they're not scrutinized as much as, say, construction companies are by the HSE. So they're not using all our time up, but they're using enough of our time up so they know that safety is, you know, at the forefront of their mind. So I think it's very good to have your ideal client, but you also need a spread of clients across industries.
Yeah, I think that's good advice.
And the other thing is, you need to make sure you have a spread of clients that pay you varying amounts of money as well. So we've got some clients that pay just our minimum fee, and some clients that pay us, you know, thousands of pounds a month.
Bronze, silver, gold package or whatever.
Yeah, we have it. Yeah, exactly. We have a bronze, silver, gold package. So we have a range of clients that pay us a range of different amounts of money. So, which is good, because it, you know, if we lost a client, you are going to lose clients. It's not going to be the client that you think you're going to lose, and you will lose them, and it could be for any reason. But you know, in my experience, you know, one day you just get a telephone call out the blue or whatever it is, and they say, oh, you know, we're bringing safety in house now.
Yeah.
And you do need a range of varying clients. You know, we used to know a company that they did work for an ice cream van manufacturer, and that was it. That was their only client, an ice cream van manufacturer. And you think, wow, you know, if they just stop working, if they decide to just pack it in or whatever,
very seasonal
business. Well, I think they were very busy at certain times of the year. And that was it. And it was just very, it's a very dangerous game that you play if you've got all your eggs in one basket. So I'd recommend, if you are starting out, yes, you have your target market, which may be big corporates, and that's where you want to be, but don't negate the need to have these small clients just to get a little bit of money coming in. Plus, what you're also doing as well, if you're doing a good job, you're building up a bank of testimonials.
Yeah.
You know, you're building up people that are talking highly of you. And what you'll find that you'll just get business off the back of doing really good work. I mean, we get 90% of our work comes from referrals. Which is obviously great, because it means we're doing a good job.
Yeah.
And we don't have to spend much on sales and marketing.
Go on.
I was just going to say, interestingly, you know, we've been going nearly 5 years now, and like I say, majority of our work comes from referrals. So we've always been concerned with, well, what if that dries up? And we've been saying that for 5 years. So we engaged a telemarketing company, and I think they did 3 months for us on the phones, and we didn't really get much out of that. We then tried doing SEO, didn't really get much out of that. Facebook ads, didn't really get much out of that. Then we just gone back to, well, it's just
good old work,
the way we get our business people. Yeah, it's just meeting people. People seem to like Kate and I, and I'm not really sure why. Might be the beard. I see yours is coming along nicely.
Coming along, yeah. I've been trying to grow it. A few times I thought I could go big with this, and then just thought, nah, I don't know. I've tried it a few times and it just gets a bit itchy for me. So this is probably the longest it will ever be. It has been a bit longer, if I'm honest. I've looked like a full-on homeless man at one point. It's that bit in between, though, isn't it? Like yours is quite well defined.
Yeah, that was ages ago for me. But I think, you know, going back to what I was saying, I think people do business with people who they like.
Yeah.
And with us, like, the more we get out there, the more we meet people and have a coffee with people, and we go to networking events and we just get chatting to people. Who are they going to call when something goes wrong? You know, who are they going to call when they need point of view? You know, they're going to remember you, and you know, or one of their mates has a problem. Give I'm going to call, you'll sort you out.
I think that actually segues quite nicely onto like, in my opinion, the power of YouTube and podcasts and things like that. So, you know, you have just started your YouTube channel and started vlogging your kind of your daily COVID life, which is currently not very adventurous as most COVID lives are. But when you go back to business, you know, you'll start to see it. And there's a lot of big businesses now doing this. I mean, we only have to look at the likes of like Gary Vaynerchuk, who you know, is doing it every day now. He just pays D-Rock to follow him around, and he's just vlogging absolutely everything he does. And a lot of the advice that I've kind of, that we've took on board and what we do with YouTube is a lot of it comes from Gary, if I'm honest, and I'm not ashamed to admit that. I think the guy's a genius, if I'm honest. And and he says on there a couple of things, like firstly, one, you know, give your advice away for free, and that's probably one question for you, you know. And there is a good argument to that, like, well, hang on a minute, you know, I've worked as a safety professional for 10 years and now I'm going to give advice away for free. And he was challenged on that in one podcast I was listening to, and the guy said, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're a garage, you're a mechanics, for example, as we would call it over here, you should have a YouTube channel teaching people how not to need your mechanics. Because they'll try it and they'll either screw it up even more, or they're not going to try it and come back to you anyway. But what it does is it builds that relationship. It builds that. So when I ring Simon, because I've watched his vlogs, it's a face to the name. I know who Simon and Kate are. You know, I feel like part of their kind of life. There's such, in my opinion, there is such a power to giving this stuff away for free. People think it's a risk, I think. You know, I've had a certain word of mouth come back to the certain executive of a certain very large and popular health and safety qualification has just had the rug pulled out from beneath their feet by another qualification. By word of mouth, has said, shouldn't be giving stuff away for free. You know, you've worked all these years, you should be charging for it. Now, I'm not going to listen to a qualification that's just absolutely been wiped off the market by somebody else. But that aside, it's like, I don't agree with it. I think we don't sell. Like, we have only just now started saying we don't offer much. We offer a keynote and we've got one affiliate partnership now. That's it. We do not proactively sell, yet I've had business come from this podcast. And we don't sell. We don't have a website. We don't sell. We've only just created a LinkedIn page. It works, in my opinion, but it took us, like, we're coming up to 2 years now. So in my opinion, YouTube is a free TV advert. It's relationship building. It's a no-brainer to me. If you do a podcast, do a podcast. But, you know, I think there's value in that stuff. It'd be interesting. Obviously, you do, because you've just started as well. But it'd be interesting to see, one, your opinion on it, but two, what got you to that point? You say you've been going a fair few years now. Why YouTube now? Because I'm assuming you're time lapsing this conversation because your camera's sitting up behind you, which I'm
fine with that. Although you can only record for 30 minutes, can't you? And then it stops, apparently. So.
What have you got? Canon M50? Yeah, I think it does stop at an hour. I think.
We'll say that. Yeah, I think it's stopped now, but yeah, I'll time lapse it.
You can, I like, see a time it lapse, mate. I like a time lapse.
It's
Sorry to repeat the question. I distracted. It was one was is there value in that kind of to a point giving stuff away for free and that kind of relationship building, and then what kind of why now for you to start doing that YouTube
channel? So we've always valued giving away things for free. So we've always been releasing fact sheets. And telling people how to do it, because like you said then, you tell them how to do it and then you say, look, if you don't want to do it, we'll just do it for you. You know, you're busy building your business, you're busy selling your widgets, you know, just give us a shout. We're experts in it. We do it quicker because we do it all the time anyway. So yeah, there's definitely value in giving stuff away for free. That was my thinking, or certainly believed that 5 years ago. There's a lot of noise now. Everyone's doing it. You go on LinkedIn, there's post after post after post after post. There is so much information out there now. I'm starting to think, what is it worth continuing to add to the noise on certain platforms? So this kind of like leads us on to why LinkedIn and why YouTube. So there's a lot of noise on LinkedIn. You know, there's a lot of, you know, you do a 5-day free challenge. Part of that challenge is to post 8 to 10 pieces of content on LinkedIn a day. So if you imagine the amount of people doing that because they're part of a challenge, you start reading some of the things that people are posting, and it's just like
dross.
You know, well, yeah, it's like, oh, post your favorite movie of all time. It's like, well, I don't care. I don't care what anyone else's favorite movie is. You know, this isn't Facebook. It's for business. But because people are in a challenge and they've got to generate 8 to 10 pieces of content a day, you know, it's just, they're just putting whatever's popping into the head. And it, you know, it's a little frustrating now that there is a lot of noise out there. I do think LinkedIn is good, but there is a lot of noise. So we started to think, well, why do people work with us? You know, like I said, 90% of our work comes from referrals, and I still don't understand why, but a lot of people like Kate and I, and I'm not sure why. And that kind of got us onto, well, why don't we film like kind of like this vlog? It's kind of like day-to-day interaction of running two businesses with a family, how that dynamic works, because it is difficult. Business is difficult. Life is difficult on its own. Running a family is difficult on its own. And, you know, if people work with us because they like us, because they met us at a networking event or wherever it may be, then maybe them seeing us on YouTube and seeing our interaction is good, because there isn't as many people putting content out there onto YouTube. So that was one of the reasons why. The other reason is I hate being on video. I hate doing it. I really do not like it. Kate's really good. She's really good at presenting. She's really good on video. She used to be a primary school teacher, so she, you know, she could stand up. If you said to her, right, you know, you need to go and stand in the XL in London and present to 10,000 people, and you've got 20 minutes to talk on submarines, and you've got no time to prepare, she'd just go and do it. Not a problem, off the cuff, and she'd probably talk for 2 hours. Got me to do that, I'd just run off. You wouldn't see me again. So it's kind of like a self-development thing for me. Okay. I don't like doing videos. I put myself out there and started doing some Facebook ones. But again, because that was kind of like adding to the noise, the Facebook ones, the LinkedIn ones, we think a more vlog style would work better. I really struggle when it comes to presenting a formal, you know, something that, if I've got to read certain statistics or present certain facts, I really struggle doing that. I really struggle focusing on what I've got to say and actually in dealing with the camera. I can talk to you now on this because it's off the cuff. We're just chatting and you're chatting about my businesses. And I find that very easy. I could sit here and talk all the time. Whereas when I've got to do something that's quite scripted, I really struggle. So our first video that we did, our first vlog that we did the other night, you can actually tell there's a section at the start where I just grabbed the camera, went downstairs, and I'm in my vest, and I've just started, me and Kate just started talking about how we're struggling with, you know, coronavirus and lockdown at the moment. And then there's kind of a bit where we go walking the dogs, and there's a second bit which is a scripted bit. Right. And you can see the change in me.
Yeah.
And the amount of times I had to edit that and cut bits out, and the amount of swearing that was involved was just incredible. I really struggled just delivering some basic wording that we wanted to say.
I get it.
I'm getting better at it. I actually took the camera, I think it was last week now. I got the camera, basically kept it with me all day and just videoed myself doing stuff and just started chatting to the camera. So I am getting a bit better at it. And I think moving forwards now, our videos and things are all going to be much more not scripted and more vlog style. Look, this is what we're up to today.
That's what a vlog is, essentially. It's just a camera following you around. So I think
yeah.
It should be
good. But I remember we did, Dragon's Den?
Yeah, I love Dragon's Den.
So there was a competition. When we first set up Rhino, there was a competition locally to us. It was called Dabber's Den, based in Nantwich, because people from Nantwich are called Dabbers. I don't know why. I'm sure someone will be able to explain and post it in the comments. It was called Dabber's Den, and there was I can't remember the prize. It was £5,000, I think. And we entered that, and we had to do a formal presentation, like on the TV show. So there was five people sat there, someone from NatWest, an accountant, someone who ran a restaurant, a local councillor, someone else. I'm missing someone. I'm probably missing someone important as well. Probably a client or something. There's someone else. And we had to do a presentation. So me and Kate had worked really hard. We've been rehearsing this presentation. And then I remember walking in to the meeting, and I knew one of the guys. So I went up and, I said hi to him. And then I remember going down the line of people, and I don't know why, I just made up their names. I didn't know them. And I just made up. I just said, hi, nice to meet you, Sarah. I don't know why I did it. And it just completely just went, I don't know, it was just weird, so strange. And I just made up everyone's name as I went down this line of people, because I was so stressed about talking.
Because
and
it then, was scripted or just
talking. Because it was scripted. So I did that, which completely threw me off anyway. So then I had to obviously deliver my bit, which was scripted, which I really struggled with anyway. Kate was there and obviously did brilliant with her bit. And then it was questions and answers, and I flew through that because we knew how much we'd turn over, we knew our profit, we knew all our figures, we knew our goals, we knew what we wanted to do. And that bit, it was easy. Flew through that completely.
I can relate to that 100%.
We did end up second, which was nice.
Oh, that's all right. Well done.
We came second, and we won something off the back of that, which was good. I've just remembered who it was that I missed out, and he was a client. He is a client as well, actually. Oh. It was a solicitor, the owner of a big solicitors firm that we actually look after his health and safety now as well. So. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this.
Got some business eventually out of it. I can totally relate to that. And I think it is important to identify your strengths, and if you can improve them 100%. And I do think making videos is something, in my opinion, everyone should be doing. But that scripted part is interesting, because I think I'm quite similar to you in a point that if I'm scripted, My style is much more like relaxed, flowy, off the cuff, like, and not so. Yeah. I kind of how I get around it, and whether you want to go with this or not, but we do those kind of structured how-to videos on the YouTube channel. Obviously, you've probably seen them, but they're still very off the cuff. Like the only structure part to it mostly is like the hook is the same, the introduction is the same for every video, and then it'll just be what we're talking about and some key points. I normally just do like four or five bullet points, So yeah. I'll, you know, stop recording. Well, I won't stop recording, but I'll cut that bit and I'll look, right, next key point is this.
Yeah.
And I can talk off the key point, like, easy. I'm a talker. I can do it. That's why I've got a bloody podcast. You know, I can talk for England. But sometimes, for example, like my wife now, she's got much more attention to much better attention to detail than I have. I'm a fly by the seat of your pants kind of man, and so she does most of the editing. She can just do it so much better than I can. So she does a lot of the editing, and sometimes when we get really technical videos, and a prime example that sits out in my head, we did a civil law versus criminal law video. That's very technical. If you get law wrong, you're going to have some kind of asshole lawyer commenting on your face. So, you know, in the beginning, we just made it clear. And I always do when I talk about law, look, I'm not a lawyer. This is my interpretation. And this is what my research tells me. But that was heavily scripted. And that was one of the most stressful videos I've ever done. Now, if you go talk about, well, five steps to culture, I just sat in front of my bloody fish tank and just waffled away, because that stuff just is so natural to me. But how I kind of get around that, if I am referencing a part of a video, it'd be like statistics or a quote from someone, I'll be quite clear to the camera and I'll just say, I'm going to get my paper because I want to make sure I get it right. It's not my quote. And I go, the HSE says that the statistics are blah, blah, blah. And I get rid of the paper then. And then I say, right, now it's me talking. That's just how I get around it, because it's not my strength to read off the script. And I've done videos within, like, the kind of in an employed role as a safety professional. And when you get like the bloody comms team, they're like, right, this is the tone of voice we want you to have. This is the script we want you to have. We want you to wear this color so you're on brand. It's like, it just doesn't work for me. And I shut down and I just can't work. So I do get what you're saying, 100%. And I think that's the beauty of video as well, is it's raw you to a point. I know you edit, everyone edits it, I edit it as well, but it depends on how authentic you want to be. But one of the biggest messages of rebranding safety is it is authentically me. I cut very little out of our stuff, you know? And I think that's the beauty of it. And I think vlogs are exactly that. I think vlogs are just, if I started my business tomorrow, we would blog it from day one, 100%. I think it's
totally
amazing.
I mean, I think there's a good quote, which is perfection is the enemy of progress.
Yeah, love that.
And I always work to that. And I'd rather release the video now. And we've had some great feedback. I know you've watched it and you've given us some good tips, which we've implemented as well. And we've got feedback from other people as well. And without getting out there and putting it out there and be willing to accept that feedback, it just wouldn't have happened. We just wouldn't have done it. And I'm very much more action orientated, and Kate's more the perfectionist. So stuff always kind of lands in the middle because of that, which kind of works out. So it's neither one way or another. So stuff.
And I thought it was a good vlog, if I'm honest. So for the first vlog, I thought the angles you were cutting and the kind of shots you were taking, you know, that's stuff that a lot of people don't think about. The amount of vlogs I've seen is just one person carrying a camera around all day with some very basic cuts. It's like, oh, this is boring. But like, I could tell you'd put, I think it was a GoPro or something on your dog. And you've done shots where you put the camera outside the door, obviously gone back inside the house, and then come out the door. You know, people watching a video who don't edit videos don't even think about how you do that. But that stuff that for me, I thought was impressive.
No, it was. Well done. I mean, it's so interesting when you come back and you start editing it out. I mean, we probably had an hour's worth of footage, and we had to cut so much out. The amount of times I went, it's just, you know, crazy. And again, that comes down to thinking about what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And just trying to get that comprehension going. I really do struggle with that. And you can probably count the amount of erms in this podcast. Let us know how many that I've done. It's something I just, but I think it comes with practice.
Definitely.
And you might, you know, you can then go through and edit it to an extent. And I did get to a point where I was just like, oh, I'm just fed up with this now. And I just needed to just put it out there, because I think you can just keep editing and keep editing and keep editing and keep editing. And I just got to the point where I was annoying myself, you know, watching yourself on a screen talking is just, it's a bit bizarre. Yeah. So
I actually still really struggle listening. I can listen to my stuff when I'm edit, so I can listen back to this and edit it quite easily. The videos we make, obviously my wife edits most of them, but I don't mind hearing my own voice. But for some reason, I still really struggle if I'm being interviewed. So we've had two podcasts now, where two people have invited us to be interviewed, and I've got the content, but I haven't put it out yet. I really struggle to listen to me being interviewed, because it's a completely different dynamic. It's complete. I can watch me give a keynote speak. I can watch me sit in my spare room in the studio, whatever, doing a toolbox talk video, all of that stuff. I could watch it all day long, but me, like being interviewed, it's still struggles. Yeah. All of those things come with time. All of them.
Yeah, I mean, I was the same. Whenever I'm on a video, I can't really watch it. Yeah. I hate the sound of my own voice. But interestingly, when we filmed our first vlog, I had a cold or something, and it changed the sound of my voice. It was a lot deeper, and then I could watch it back. It was so strange. I was just like, it doesn't sound like me, so it's fine watching it.
So one kind of last thing I could talk about the YouTube stuff all day. So I want to kind of move on before I do waffle too much. I like what you're doing. I like that you've kind of acknowledged that, moved on. But there's an interesting point, like kind of about scaling safety, which I think, you know, when we talk about scaling businesses, you know, you hear it all the time, you know, off with these kind of business coaches on LinkedIn and podcasts and Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, how we're going to scale this and make it international. I want to scale it to a different country. It's like, one, you know, for those of us that might not know, what is scaling? And two, can you even scale safety?
Like, well, I think it all comes back to what we were saying before, is what is your goal? What do you want to do? Being a one-man band health and safety practitioner is fine if that's what your goal is.
Yeah.
You know, and if you do want to scale, you know, scaling in my eyes is growing your business to a point where you're well recognized, and whether that is globally or just in Europe. You know, I was chatting to one of our RAW members, rang me yesterday. She's developed an online training for COVID-19 for food manufacturers. So she was chatting to me about the pricing structure of that and just around that as a whole product. And I said to her, you know, look, this is online. You could take this global if you wanted to. If you wanted to have that scale, you could deliver it across, you know, the globe. Obviously, the only downside to it would be obviously translating it. But you can, you know, you go, you know, you could look at America, you could look at Canada, places like that immediately. So don't, you know, put your focus on where you want to be. So if you do only want to be a one-man band, then that's fine. But you've got to bear in mind there's going to be a limit to the amount of clients you can look after. And what you don't want to do is to have so many clients that you cannot provide a suitable safety service to them. So you do have to be very, very careful, because obviously if something does go wrong, then the HSE will be all over you as well as your clients. So you do need to make sure that you set your scale as to where you want it to be, you know. And if you do want to grow, you know, can you grow safety and have European clients? Can you grow safety and have global clients? You know, we've got a global PLC that we look after. We started looking after them a couple of months ago, and what we've just done is we've just implemented their health and safety management system to cover the five offices they've got in the UK. And what we're going to do now, once we've got all that agreed, we are going to sit down and look and see how we can replicate that management system out to the offices that are global. So they've got offices in China, Japan, America, Belgium, maybe somewhere else. So what we're going to try and do is base their management system on the British standards, but also bearing in mind any, you know, local standards as well. So we're going to obviously be heavily liaising with the people within that, in the specific country, to see what their specific standards are there, and then come up with a, you know, a global management system. So I think it can be done. Obviously, it's quite a lot of work to do, but I think you can scale it to whatever size you want. You know, I wouldn't set your sights too low, but you know, success to you may mean something completely different to me. May mean something completely different to someone else. So I think you always need to take it back to, well, what do you want?
It's interesting, you've kind of broke into that kind of global market via a client. Like, so did you had that kind of UK contract with them, and then they said, what can you look at our global kind of offices as well? That's interesting. That kind of enables you to be able to say, it's that kind of testimonial piece again, isn't it? You say, well, we're already working globally, you know, whether you've done it via a client or landed a client in China, but it's kind of that foot in the door model, isn't it? You've got that foot in the door in their China office, which gives you that experience in China, for example, which gives you that foot in the door, which then opens up the door eventually to China, potentially, and so on and so forth. So it's interesting.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. You know, there is some talks of us potentially going and doing site visits out there, India, China, and places like that. So that would obviously be interesting to actually go and do. Obviously, there's a cost element involved in that as well. So what we're going to try and do as much of it remotely as possible. So we're going to come up with like a standard, you know, inspection form based on, you know, UK regulations. Get that filled out by someone at the, you know, the global offices, and just get like kind of a baseline of where their safety is at in comparison to the you know, the UK safety regulations, and just see where they currently stand. You know, how many toilets have they got? Have they got drinking water? You know, things like that. I mean, I don't know. Never been.
Well, it's interesting actually when you start kind of looking at that international market, or when the different cultures start to impact it. And then when I worked for and I won't say who they are, where I worked for a company who had a factory in Africa, and we got wind of basically that the international head of safety was based in the UK, and basically we as a team had got wind that they don't have any kind of foot protection, no safety shoes or anything. And they were like, oh, what do we do? How do we do it? And we were like, well, we can just buy it over here and ship it out to you. We had within our kind of budget, in the UK budget, or we had kind of approached finance and said, can we absorb the cost in our UK budget to enable us to buy it for the African budget so that they didn't feel the cost, because that was mainly the problem. And they were like, yeah, sure. So we basically brought thousands of safety shoes, got them shipped out to their factory. The next day, not one member of staff turned up with the safety shoes on. They all took them home. And then when they were asked, why are you not wearing them? They said, because it's the best pair of shoes we've got. We want to save it for when we go out for dinner or go to parties and stuff like that. So it's really, and obviously that's not the whole of Africa. Our factory was in a not very, you know, a very poor area. So it's not like it was in an affluent part of Africa, but you know, it is so interesting, that cultural piece. And I think you and your team will probably thrive off of it. Love it. Well, enjoy it. It'd be a massive learning curve.
We've done a lot of work with the Japanese. So when they set up offices over here, we work with a company that basically facilitates that. So it's run by a Japanese gentleman who he travels between here and Japan, does a lot of work with the Japanese government. And then people like Hitachi and place, people like that will approach him and say, right, we want a European head office. It's got to be in London. We want an office space near the tube. We want five staff. We want an accountant, health and safety, blah, blah, blah. And he will then go and facilitate all that. So we obviously come in and do the fire risk assessment on the office, get the health and safety policy up and running. And we've probably been working with him now for a long time. And we actually did some Japanese culture training, which was very, very interesting. And one of the big things is when they hand you a business card, is that you actually read the actual business card and you don't just shove it in your back pocket. You actually read the business card and you comment about, yeah, or you like the color or the logo or whatever it may be. And it's very, very interesting. The you whole
shake their hand at the same time as taking it as well, if I remember rightly.
Yeah,
it's back now, isn't it? That's it.
And it's all these little quirks and things. Where I think it does make it very, very, very interesting. Working with different cultures, and I think that's the thing I get out of health and safety the most is how interesting it is. You know, people ask me what I do when I say health and safety consultant, and they go, right, you know, end of conversation and stuff like that. And if I actually get to talk to them for a bit longer, you know, we look after an airline that fly out of Luton Airport. You know, I was doing an inspection on a cruise ship in Southampton last year, I think. We look after all these interesting businesses. You know, we've got a client locally to us that fits out coaches for football clubs. So I've been on Liverpool's, Man City's football club, you know, all these interesting things as part of my job. And surely that's more interesting than, you know, someone just sat in an office 9 to 5. And that's what I find, you know, working with these different cultures, working in different industries, chatting to business owners and directors just in general about, you know, business. And the biggest takeaway I get is when we actually implement health and safety, and it helps them drive their business forward. It helps them, you know, win tenders, win multi-million pound contracts. And they are then growing because of a good safety culture.
Yeah,
and obviously there's other benefits to safety as well, like people not dying or getting hurt and things. Yeah. But I think, you know, if you've got a good safety culture, that shouldn't be happening anyway. I take more from the whole business growth off the back of good safety.
Yeah, it's that kind of positive reinforcement that we don't talk about. I talk about that a lot on the podcast, and we've had loads of people on, we talk about that kind of thing. It's like, you know, we only focus on the negatives. You know, that's a big part of Eric Honagel's work in safety too. You know, he's talking about a good example. I don't think it's his quote. I think it's a quote that he takes from somewhere else. I can't remember. But you know, you can't work out what makes a successful marriage by only looking at divorce. And that's exactly what we do in safety. We're trying to work out good safety by only looking at the bad stuff.
You
know, let's try and look at what we're doing right, what safety can do. It should be an investment. You know, we had Jonathan Dempsey on a while ago, and he talks about, you know, risk management is an investment. You know, that kind of changing in mindset and how we manage the stuff. If you do this right, it's a good business, you know.
Yeah.
And you said yourself that those kind of skills as a safety professional have helped you in building a business yourself. So I don't know, if you were to kind of give one top tip for somebody that's thinking, I'm going to start a consultancy tomorrow, what do you think it would be?
Yeah, it goes back to what I said yesterday. What?
I said, that's a challenge. One tip, just one tip.
Yeah. One tip, coffee.
One tip of I'm going to start a consultancy tomorrow. What would it be? Come on.
My one tip would be coffee.
Coffee? Oh, sorry.
Start meeting people, buy them a coffee and pick the brains. And you will get more value out of that than anything else. Certainly when you're first starting off, you know, just pick up your Chamber of Commerce magazine, pick up, you know, your local paper, see who's just put an article in the paper to say that they've just opened a new building, say they've just taken on a load of new staff, you know, and then drop them an email. Love what you're doing. Can I grab a coffee? Pick your brains. You know, and the worst that's going to happen is you don't get a reply.
Yeah.
But like I say, I've done that. And most of them were like, yeah, I'll meet you. Meet you at Costa. Let's grab a coffee and just have a natter. And it's just about getting your name out there. Get, because no one's going to use you if they don't know you. And my one tip would be coffee, and use that and meet people. Tell them about what you do. Listen to what they do. And just see if they need a hand with anything.
Awesome. I love that. And if anyone's listened to this and they're like, I need a business coach or even a safety professional, you know, get hold of Simon and his team. What does that look like? How do they do it?
Yeah, so the probably easiest way is to go to our website. So rhinosafety.co.uk and rawbusinesscoaching.co.uk. And I think our YouTube channel is just Simon Walter. So if you check that out, you might want to wait until Monday until video 2 comes out, because video 1 was a bit, you know, not brilliant. So yeah,
we'll link it all in the description. Could you give us like a bit of a quick? I think we all know what a safety consultancy looked like, but and you alluded to it earlier, but like what is Raw Business Coaching? What does that look like for say I'm a potential customer of yours. You mentioned a mastermind and things like that. What is that? What's it look like?
Yeah, so basically what we do is if you were to sign up as a client of ours to Raw Business Coaching, we would have a one-to-one meeting with you first, where we'd basically run through where you're currently up to in your business life. So what you're currently turning over, what's your current profit? We then look at where do you want to be? What are your goals? You know, and what we try and do is get as much out of you as possible, so we understand what your business is, what your business does, and where you want it to go, where you want it to be. So once we've gathered all that information, then what we do is there's a monthly meeting. So this is where we have the mastermind. First thing we do in the morning, we all our members get together. We have the meeting at a hotel conference center, so we take the business owners out of their normal day-to-day environment, and we provide you know, tea, coffee, we provide snacks, and there's food, there's lunch provided as well throughout the day, so we kind of take that away from them and they can solely focus on their business. So the first thing we do in the morning is we go over what wins that each business owner has had since the last meeting, because I think we focus too much on the negatives in business. You know, well, I just lost a big client, I've got a problem with a member of staff, I don't know what to do, rather than, you know, patting ourselves on the back. So go through the wins. So it could be, you know, just, you know, won a big tender, just hit a sales target, whatever it may be. So that's the first thing. And then what we'll do, we'll then go around the room and we will look at what's the one critical thing that's causing you a problem at the moment that you want to get solved today. So everyone will then talk through what is their one problem from a strategic point of view that they need assistance with to help moving their business forwards. And it's very much a group-led mastermind. So we'll go around the room and I might say, oh, I've got a problem with a member of staff who's doing this, that, and the other. And then you may say, well, we had the same problem with a member of staff and we did X, Y, and Z. Someone might say a different solution. So at the end of the day, then you go away with a couple of different options and maybe some more clarity on how to deal with an issue, with a problem.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, each member will then go away with 3 action points. So they'll write down their action points, which will then, we can then hold them accountable to those. Because you know what it's like, you get all revved up in these kind of meetings, and then you go away and daily life hits you and you know you don't get stuff done. Mm. We will hold them accountable to getting these things done, so at the next monthly mastermind, when we meet, we can talk through their actions. You know, how well did they do? Did they manage to complete all 3? Have they had a problem with one of them? And again, we can talk around that.
And in between, so that's like, kind of those masterminds, when people like ring you up and be like, yo, Simon.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have, yo, Simon. Yeah. So they can ring us up. So if they've got a problem, if they've got a more sensitive subject that they want to talk to us on a one-to-one, they can either phone us up, or we have a Friday where we basically block out the day, and members can block and come and see us at our office and just go through things on a one-to-one basis. So we have those 2 options as well. Our members also get access to an online training portal that covers things like negotiation skills, leadership skills, LinkedIn for business, SEO for business, Facebook for business, and things like that. So members get access to that as well. So they get a whole range of services. And I think it's important that business owners get other different opinions. Business is tough, and don't struggle on your own. You know, you need to speak to other people. Other people have, you know, probably been there, seen it and done it, and could probably help you out through a problem that, you know, you think is really difficult. And I think it's important to get that assistance and that help. And that is why we set up Raw Business Coaching. We set it up just to help other business owners, because we know what it's like. We know the struggle as business owners, just, you know, to keep things going. And certainly in this business climate at the moment, I think it's very important that, you know, we talk, just from a mental health point of view. We do talk to different people. And I think as a business owner, sometimes you can feel even more lonely, because maybe, you know, your parents don't understand, or your friends don't understand, because they don't run their own business. But where you can get into a room with other business owners, they know what it's like. They know you've got to turn over X amount of money just to pay the salaries for your people you employ, just to keep the lights on in the office. They know what it's like when you've got an underperforming member of staff, but you don't know if you can get rid of him or not. Or how do you get rid of him? Or maybe you shouldn't get rid of him. Don't know. So this is where getting together and just talking to other people and asking for help or clarification on what you should do, this is where it's helpful. And that's what we wanted to do. That's why we set it up. It wasn't to make, you know, money. It was just to help other business owners. It's grown to, you know, we only ever want to keep it small. You know, the masterminds that we've been involved with, we did feel that they got too big. We want to keep it under 12 members. And I think interestingly, at the moment, I think we've got eight, nine members. And some of them come as far away as Derby and drive all the way up to Crewe. Every month, and we've had an inquiry through from Swansea as well. So it's really growing, and again, it's word of mouth, which again is good. It's good, yeah.
And in the light of upfront prices, is that a set rates? What is that, like a solid rate to join the membership? Or
yeah, so it's £300 a month, but we've got a 10% discount on.
Okay,
sorry.
And you just get all of that stuff you talked about. You got that monthly meeting, the option to book a slot on Friday and drive up and sit down with you,
yeah,
ring you and just be like, yo, Simon, etc.
Yeah, if you want to say yo, Simon, yeah. Yeah, so if there's anyone interested, we can send over. Obviously, there's a breakdown of everything that's included in the service. There's probably stuff I've missed out there as well. But it's just, you know, it's certainly not right for everyone. You know, we've been involved in businesses where the directors were very much like, well, we're doing it this way. I'm not doing it anyone else's way. I don't need anyone else's input. And there are, you know, obviously everyone is different and, you know, they're not the people that get value out of this.
Yeah.
But we know it works because we've been doing it for 2 years. You know, we've got most of our clients that sign up in year one have signed up again in year two. So, you know, we do know it works. We want to help as many people as we can. Awesome. And if anyone wants to have a chat, just, you know, just give us a call. You can find us on Facebook. We're not difficult. I'm not hard to find. You can find us on Facebook. You can ask for some more information. Happy to send over some info.
Awesome. We'll put your websites on the link in the description and your YouTube channel as well, seeing as it's brand new. I think by the time this comes out, your episode 2 and probably 3 or 4 might be out by then. We've got quite a big backlog of stuff.
They'll get better then. Yeah, they'll get better. So by the time this comes out, you can, I'll probably delete the old ones then and just be the new one up there.
Hey, I've got my first ever podcast up, and that was a hands-free headset and a bloody phone. So,
I'll have to watch that one. I'll have to have a laugh.
Yeah, I'm hanging over the end of my side. I remember doing it, and I won't delete it. I like it. Very me. Like you were saying, perfection is the enemy of progress. That first podcast we did, I think it's about safety signs. It's just months and years of kind of desperate to do something. Not doing it, just all blurting out in one, and frustration of safety, etc. It's all blurting out, and it's like, I think it's like 2 minutes long or something like that. And then from there, we've now grown into this, and I'll never get rid of it. I'm staying true to it. I think it's, I love it. Anyway, Simon, thank you very much for coming on the podcast again.
Thanks for the invite. Thanks, James.
Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Simon. I really like kind of, I just like a lot of things he talks about. I really like that kind of thing he says about putting on the wall. You know, we don't work with dicks. Like, that proper resonates with me. I love that. I just don't like dickheads, like, in general, really. I don't think anyone does. I really like his kind of no bullshit way of looking at it. And go and check out their vlog if you like what they're doing. You can check them out even more before you commit to business. That's the good thing about vlogs and podcasts. You can really get to know somebody. So go check them out as well. It's in early days as well, so you can really see them in a kind of rawest form, you know, like I was back when I first seen the episode of the podcast. You still listen to the first episode of the podcast. Oh my God, it's horrendous. And that's where Simon is with his YouTube stuff. You can really get into it. But he's gone in heavy with the kind of camera angles and stuff and proper, really challenging, you know, the kind of health and safety market to say, you know, this is what we can do. I like it. I like to see more people on YouTube, especially in this health and safety game. It's nice to see. So well done, Simon. Go check out his YouTube channel. It'll be linked in the description below. If you enjoyed this episode and you thought it brought some value of it to you, then please give us a rating review on iTunes. It really helps us, like, do the algorithm thingy-majiggy and get into other people's ear holes. If you're on any other platforms, I don't think any of the others have reviews, so just click like follow and share it. If you can share it with one person that you think will benefit, that would really help me as well. If you do any of that stuff, like tag us in it, screenshot it on any of our social medias, Twitter it's Safety Rebranded, and everywhere else it's Rebranding Safety. So come chat to us or share our podcast and then just let us know and we can give you a shout out on this podcast. Otherwise, I'll catch you next week in the podcast. Safe.